So we're going to let actual audience members ask questions prior to the speakers, but the speakers will be able to ask questions later here.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm Jenna Todd. I'm a student of Finance America. I'm really excited about this project, and Dr. Friedman kind of touched on my question a little bit, but I'd like to hear from others as well. What do you see as the value? This isn't about really an interesting presentation, although they were all great. What do y'all all see as really the value of this collaborative and moving public health forward beyond just these particular few collaborative projects? How do you see tying together all the individual projects, and what do you see the kind of eventual benefits to public health based on this insight initiative?
So I'm going to repeat the question very briefly because it's being recorded, and they asked me, although you spoke very clearly, so it might have been picked up by the microphone. But the question is, where do we see this collaborative effort, this Insight Network, going in terms of impacting on public health? Who would like to take that? David?
Well, I think that the intent at a population level is to increase knowledge, awareness, and as exemplified by this screening protocol, the opportunity to set up mechanisms to get care to people who are not being served by the system. I mean, and this is an indictment of the whole U.S. healthcare system, but it's particularly problematic, I think, in the area of vision care for a multitude of reasons.
And I would say one of the serendipitous things that's happened is that the groups that were chosen to be part of this, and this is on the basis of applications, all bring very different viewpoints to bear, both in terms of regional, where they are regionally and how that impacts on ethnicities and underserved minorities in those particular areas, also in terms of how things are structured in Alabama. It's more of a community hospital-based structure that's going to be where the rollout is for these cameras. So I think that what we're finding is that there is the sum is much greater than the individual parts in terms of the expertise that's being brought to bear. So we hope this will be a Manhattan Project of sorts in terms of what ends up coming out of it. Although it's going to be a lot of pilot data in these 5 years and a lot of new ideas as much as anything else. Anybody else want to add anything else to that? Paul?
One of the things that I'm thinking about with that.
This is Anna Murchison from Wells, one of our team.
One of the things we've all talked about, too, is partly like Dr. Howell was saying, based on the expertise of the different centers and all the data in very different populations, based on the data that we come up with, we may have the potential to impact policy. So that could be a big difference for reading care.
And I think our partnership with CDC is going to be key there, and input from NIH people, too, who care about this. Yes?
I'll just speak in the microphone.
Oh, that's
I'm
so
good. Anyway, right
how
here.
Nice. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kathy O'Connor from CDC, National Center for Health Statistics. And I have three, I guess, comments. The first is actually a question. Is anybody going to use multiple imputation to take care of the issues with race ethnicity data, where you essentially you simulate, you take the what you have, and then you segment your cases, and then you can simulate race data for the race ethnicity data for the ones that are missing. Just curious.
If we get access to our census data, then we're gonna use those area based measures as a proxy for race and ethnicity.
Yeah.
So that's our workaround.
Okay, great. The other two issues that I wanted to bring up, they're just comments. But since these are older populations, you're going to have differential uptake and penetration of technology by age. So in terms of, you know, like sending text messages, that might work for like the 40 to 50-year-old crowd, maybe 40 to 55. But then for like the 70 and older or the 80 and older, they may not.
Right, we agree
yeah.
completely.
Yeah.
We have multiple options for them to take off when we see them.
But that's one of the things we're interested in capturing, because nobody's really looked at this population and asked them, how would you be
how
willing
would you prefer
to
be
exactly.
right.
contacted?
Right.
Right. And my third comment, I don't have an answer to this because I work on telephone surveys, and I know a lot about BRFA, so I'm with everybody on this. Because I noticed that in terms of the agreement, it was high if the visit was less than a year. It went down if it was between 1 and 2 years, and then if the visit was 2 years or more, it went it went back up, the agreement, the Kappa statistic. Or I'm sorry, not the Kappa statistic, the agreement went up, the percentage went up. So the point is that you have that, people can remember, say for instance, what they had for lunch yesterday. They can't remember what they had for lunch 2 months ago, but they might be able to remember what they had lunch a year ago if it's, you know, special event or whatever.
I think actually it's more of just an agreement of extremes. You know, it's easy to say, oh, I went greater than 2 years ago. It's easier to say I'm greater.
Right.
It's in the middle that you're right.
And I don't have an answer to that because I work on telephone surveys and I am.
Same thing happens.
Yeah, I struggle
probably
with the same thing, but yeah. I just wonder if there's some kind of method that, you know, because using telephones, you can. If you were doing face-to-face interviews, you could look at telescoping and hand them a calendar, et cetera, et cetera. But
I think the solution is going to be better technologies that monitor the health records of people. And over time, we're going to be able to know just by looking when you last were seen.
So you wouldn't even have to ask.
Because you've got the electronic health record.
Data are just so problematic. Right. I just went for a skin exam because I do that, quote, annually. It had been 3.5 years. I was sure it was a year.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I'm serious.
And you're a doctor. You're a public health professional.
So, you know, your life just travels.
Right.
And we don't remember how quickly.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you. I just wanted to
thank you.
That.
All good questions. I actually had a question about that too, Paul. If you know, speaking as a clinician myself, when sometimes when people have macular degeneration that's recorded in their chart, it may be so mild, just a few drusen, that you might not have made a big deal about it to them because you know it's going to be very slowly progressive. So I was wondering whether there's any data on vision threatening degrees of macular degeneration and self-reporting, or vision-threatening degrees of cataracts, for example, because you know, we've all got cataracts brewing in there, but we don't think of ourselves as having cataracts. But somebody, if we looked at our healthcare record, it would say, "I'm sure I've got 1+ nuclear sclerosis," for example. But I would tell you I didn't have a cataract.
Well, that's what we sort of discussed is why at least those margins didn't, you know, add up, and you know why people didn't know they had AMD or why people didn't know they had cataracts, and that's what we sort of concluded, that you know, the eye care provider was focused on just informing these folks when something was extreme, you know, not to have them walking around with this knowledge that was going to either limit them or, you know, was not in the eye care provider's eyes or opinion, you know, not necessary for them to know. And so I think that actually is a very interesting question is
paternalism.
Exactly. What kind of information is your provider not? And you know, and is that appropriate?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, we don't know what they said and what they retained either. So there's
that
gap.
There
yeah, many layers of questions. David, you had a question.
Yeah, I have a quick question for you and your group. You have a very large number of charts, and the question is, what value are you getting by going through all of them? And I think it might make sense, or if you've already done it, you could explain how you did it, but you could look at sort of the analyses you may want to do and what sample size you would need to actually complete those with relative power, because every abstracted chart costs you time and money, and you've got a lot. So it seems like, and I was thinking the same about you, but you're looking at sort of the treated and stuff, and you need at least as many as it seems like as you have, but you've got a lot.
We do have a lot, and we think we've got the manpower to go through them.
But it may not be.
No, your point.
Add any value.
Yeah. The point's well taken. I think the more data, though, the more subgroup analysis and things that we'll be able to do.
Well, I know, but I mean, you can even think of those now. You can say, okay, well, we're going to really want to
look at all these things.
Section. How many are we going to get, and how many charts do we need to get to there?
It's a point well taken. Yes, Dave.
So, I became extremely agitated after Dr. Koh's presentation to see this dramatic increase in impairment. And we had published a study a few years ago using self-report data over a 13-year period, National Health and Abuse Survey, and we actually documented in the very old, I think it was probably 80 and older, actual declines over time in the reported visual impairment, particularly those that reported that they had seen an eye care provider in the previous 12 months. And the interpretation that we had for those data was that, you know, increasing availability of treatments was probably responsible for that, although you can't discount the possibility of improved overall population health under
prevention
of risk factors in terms of smoking and that sort of thing, because smoking's been going down over time. You know, to see these dramatic increases, you know, clinically verified using, you know, clinically verified measures, is very disturbing, and people are concerned that the obesity epidemic is actually going to reverse this, you
know, all the gains,
this compression of morbidity phenomenon that has been documented. And it's almost like your data is the canary in the coal mine here, because we don't have good data. Usually outcomes in terms of morbidity are things like activities of daily living. And there's some, you know, preliminary evidence from the NHANES survey indicating that these things are reversing and starting to increase. But your data extends down into younger populations. And so I would encourage you to estimate the proportion of the increase that is attributable to diabetes, the emergence of diabetes, which, of course, goes back to obesity. And submit that to JAMA.
That's our plan.
Right. One other point what you said is that a similar analysis has been done with NHANES data looking at renal failure in association with diabetes, and that has also been increasing. And I suspect that all small vessel disease related to diabetes will be increasing as well, and large vessel disease as well, so peripheral vascular disease, heart attacks, et cetera. And so this is really a systemic health issue.
And I think, and one thing that'll be interesting from our standpoint is if, with all of this data analysis, we can look at the eye as a surrogate for everything else that's going on in the body, both in terms of prevalence of disease and also in terms of treatment effect. I mean, if you could show that adherence to examination correlated with better care, then that would be a nice endpoint for following big populations, maybe more simply, in terms of the kidney disease, heart disease, other endpoints. It's 10 o'clock, so what I'm going to ask is if everybody who has questions would mind just asking them on an individual basis, because I think we probably need to wrap up in interest of the other programs that are going on. But thank you all for your attention, and thanks to all the speakers for and teams for some really wonderful work thus far. Thank you.